Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I think the atmosphere around me is just absolutely perfectly conducive to what I'll be talking about today with the lovely author Kat Damon here to join me. Her latest book, well, I don't know if it's latest. I'm already looking forward to the sequel, is Taming Darkness, and it's all about Lucifer. And I have to tell you, Kat, that guess what? There's lightning and thunder going on around me as we speak. Amazing, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Nice. I like it.
It's like you planned it. So, you know, you and Lucifer are very tight, apparently. Or Luke, as we should call him, right?
Yes, Luke.
It's an amazing book. I'm so lucky that I got to read it. And basically, how would you describe the book? Because I'm going to describe it as 50 Shades of Awesome.
You know what? I actually have said to people, because they've said to me, well, what's your book about? How would you describe it? And I think I finally found a pitch. And what I say is, at the risk of sounding a bit arrogant and, you know, comparing myself to bigger books, which is probably the worst thing I should do, Interview with the Vampire meets 50 Shades of Grey but with demons. How's that sound?
Well, I think that sounds perfect. And you include, I mean, just the way that you portray Lucifer, because this is told from his point of view, and it is absolutely astonishing. First of all, you're stepping into a male voice. I mean, you nail it. You have a male character, and you step into him. That's one thing. That's one accomplishment for me, because I admire every single author who can step into and breathe life into a male character when they have different plumbing, shall we say. But yes, this isn't just any man. This is actually a fallen angel, Lucifer. How on earth did you inhabit this character so beautifully?
Actually, it's a really convoluted way that I found his voice, and what I actually did was I wrote the sequel first, and I wrote the sequel, so book two was originally my book one, and I wrote that about 6 years ago, and that book is told from multiple points of view, and one of them is indeed Lucas Starr. And Lucas Starr is, if you've read Taming Darkness, is Lucifer. That's what he comes to call himself. And I was having a little trouble nailing his voice because I wanted it to be so distinct. So what I did one day is I just sat down and I said, okay, vent to me, Luce. Let me hear everything and just start venting. And it started, and I started hearing everything that went on in heaven and how he was cast out and how he felt. And it was like he got to finally tell his side of the story almost as though he were on trial. And that is actually what turned into the prologue for Taming Darkness.
But you go further than that. I mean, I'm going to give you all credit that's due to you, and you're going to have to sit there and take it, little Missy, because... I mean, you do more than that. It's the smugness. It's the I'm right, they're wrong, humans are weak, and the angels were always better off without them. Okay? But it's told without, I mean, he's just so smug, the character. He's so full of pride that he really thinks, I'm on the side of right. And until everyone acknowledges it, I'm going to raise hell, quite frankly.
Right. Right,
and
exactly. Right, this is boredom because humans are nothing but objects and toys to him, and everything is just a game of manipulation, and that's how the book begins.
And what is it they say about karma? It'll come
back to bite you. Yeah,
and that's not something that Lucifer, he doesn't get that. He just thinks he's going to be playing with Maria, a woman who's about to take her vows in the church, for pity's sake. But, you know, you really... nailed Mary's character as well, because she's innocent, but what I found to be the case in other books that portray this type of character is they're beatific. They're like the light is shining on them no matter where they go. That's not what you do with Maria. She actually has a few little doubts about what she's going into. She's very pure, but she's also streetwise in a way I found astounding. Was that your purpose with that character, to give her a little bit of edge?
Well, yeah, I didn't really want her to just be this holy, angelic vessel. I mean, she has a background that was not very good. You know, I mean, you find out that she was orphaned very young and she was, you know, tossed about in foster care until she finally found her way with the church. And you don't know if she really is taking her vows because that's truly what she believes, or is she doing it just because she feels guilty? And that's the way Lucifer hooks her. Don't fall into this Catholic guilt nonsense. And that's how he begins to seduce her.
Oh, exactly. But, you know, she does not, I really like, because for those listeners out there, this is not romance. I mean, you may classify it as that, but don't make the mistake of shoehorning this into a genre it's not, because this is not, oh, Maria meets Lucifer, and Lucifer, she falls into his arms because of his devastating good looks. No, she has doubts, and not only that, but she's strong enough, and I love that you did this with a character, to say, yeah, I'm not terribly interested. You're coming on way too strong, which makes him work that much harder.
Don't you love that when he's working for it? I love it.
Well, that's what he deserves. I mean, and I'll tell you what really struck me is you've got Luke. That's the character that he plays within a novel.
Yes.
Say, this is what Kat Damon has done. Within the novel, Lucifer is playing a character called Luke Stark, which,
right.
I mean, the thing with that is that he starts getting sucked into his role because she rejects him. She's just like, yeah, I don't know about you. I don't really, yeah. Which introduces something to him that he's not accustomed to at all. And that kind of begins his karma because he's not able to immediately figure Maria out. Even better, neither was I, the reader. I couldn't figure her out. I couldn't get her angle. And that's beautiful because I think the black hole of writing is whenever you can predict what a character is. And you yank that underneath our feet in Taming Darkness. You've got to buy this book. That's all I have to say. You really need to buy Taming Darkness. And you're killing me knowing that Killing Darkness, the sequel, is already out there. I want to buy that. I want to buy it right now. Make it happen. Make it so.
I'm trying as fast as I can to get my edits done. My editor, first of all, if I could just give a shout-out, Carolee Miller is, like, the best editor in the world. She works me to bring readers the Lucifer that you love. So, you know, pass off to her. And she's working me now to do the same thing with Killing Darkness. So I am hoping for a fall release. Fingers crossed.
It's killing. That's going to get to me the rest of the night, knowing that it's out there. But we can, and if you don't follow Kat Damon on Twitter, you need to. It's @KatDamon, KatDaemon, or go to her marvelous site, katdamon.com. You are everywhere. I love the cover. By the way, if you need to go to katdaemon.com just to see the cover. And the art on your website itself is absolutely amazing. But your cover art actually changed, didn't it?
It did. And I have to say, it changed for the better. And I owe my cover art to S.P. McConnell, I am surrounded by brilliant people. I have Tara and I have S.P., and they are amazing, amazing people to work with. And he is a genius who created Maria. He brought her to life. And there are so many details and tiny little nuances throughout the artwork where you can actually see hints of the book. And I think that makes it even more special.
Oh, yeah, and it's menacing. I have not been able all weekend, because I said that to you, Terry Wolf, a great literary agent who you should follow on Twitter as well. It's @AKA_Terry. Is it? Oh, now I feel awful because I'm afraid I'm shouting her out incorrectly. Anyhow, look her up. It's absolutely fabulous. And we were talking about the cover art on Twitter on Friday. It's absolutely amazing. You would think there's a genuine sense of menace about it. And I'm trying to figure out how he managed to get that in there. It, when you received the cover art, did you squeal with joy?
Yeah, you know, when I first got it, he loves even in himself, in a good way, though. He's a little mischievous. And what he would do is he would reveal the cover to me in pieces and layers. Like, he would just show me the night sky. And then he's like, that's all you get this week. And I'm like, no! And he would show me the release sculpture over Maria's head, which I don't know if you really looked at it, but it is actually Michael about to strike down Lucifer and cut his wings off. And it just little tiny details, like I said. So when I actually saw it in its entirety, I had chills. I was blown away. It was more than I ever could have hoped for.
And he's also an author as well.
Yes.
How awesome is it to have all that support? It's just amazing. But it's definitely worth it because the book, you have a real setup in this book. I know I'm bringing it up early, but I want to tease people. I want you to read this book because, you little vixen, you've included in there a preview of Killing Darkness. And there are familiar characters in the preview, but they are in a totally different situation. You did exactly what every writer should do with any given pitch, and that is you made me want to read more. Actually, you made me angry because I couldn't read the whole thing right then and there.
No. Yeah, so I've had a lot of angry people once they read that little blurb, but for other reasons.
Yeah, but, you know, the beautiful thing is, what is it like to get this overwhelming positive response to what you've written?
You know, it really is just having your dreams come true. As cheesy as that sounds, that's all I ever wanted was to be a writer and to just have people enjoy my work. And it's slowly but surely happening. And I'm, you know, there's moments where people just write these beautiful messages to me and I just literally cry because I can't believe I've touched someone in that way that would make them so excited. And I say things to me like, I can't wait for book two. That is having a dream come true.
And it's well-deserved, though. I mean, because you're kind of like, I know Taming Darkness is self-published, and your editor and yourself and all the people who helped you bring it into being, it really speaks for what you can accomplish in self-publishing. But is that something that's going to change? Are you ever going to look for an agent down the line?
No, I have been looking for agents. I mean, you know my backstory. Taming Darkness was actually traditionally published. It's just the press went under. So I saw what could happen with it being traditionally published by a small press. And you know what? I have to say, with this particular book, self-publishing it was the best route to go, and I've achieved more self-publishing it. But I have other works that I really want to go a more traditional route for. So, yes, I am agent shopping at the present moment.
Well, I think that's kind of a cautionary tale anyhow, because a lot of us aspiring authors hear about publishing houses all the time, and we hear about how some of them do close down from time to time. Was it devastating whenever you found out that was going to happen, or the reversion of your rights? I guess I just would be terribly torn in your place. I'd be terrified that my press was closing down, but then there'd be a little glimmer of hope because, hey, they may be closing down, but my rights come back to me.
Right, and there was. And you know what? Towards the end, they actually wanted to change my series in a direction it never was meant for. And so, you know, it was the whole closing, the whole reversion of rights was bittersweet. It's saying, you know, that dream of signing a contract is over, but now I have full control. You know, my cover alone speaks volumes of what they gave me, which was a great cover, but it pales in comparison to what SP was able to do for me. And that, like I said, that's the progress. And I was able to keep my same editor because I had a great rapport with her. So we're working on the trilogy together. But that reversion of rights was, it meant so much. I mean, I wanted to just print it out and frame it and just say, okay, I got my work back. Because it wasn't even just for this series. If I was to take, you know, the character of Lilith and want to create another story just based on her, I couldn't because they own the characters too.
Which, I mean, it's a great, I don't know, it's also amazing to know that you were good enough to land a contract with a publishing company. Did that, at that point, even through all the kind of trials and tribulations you went through, knowing that you were good enough to land that contract in the first place, did that help kind of push you forward in regards to writing more?
It did and it didn't. I don't really want to get into too much how the press went under, but it made me second guess my writing. And I thought, was I good enough in the first place? But what actually did it, the people that pushed me were fans, were people I have never met, leaving reviews on Goodreads, on Amazon, and saying, I have no idea who that stranger is, and seeing people who live in other countries, Australia, you know, writing reviews for me. That's what said I need to finish this trilogy.
That's like a gift every day, isn't it? To have people actually saying, oh, I really respond to this. You've done it beautifully. And I don't care. There's no predictability in this book. There was no predictability for me. And there are, familiar premises out there, but you take it and turn it on its ear. And I think a lot of that has to do with how you have spot-on character work, because I just keep circling around to your main characters, which are Maria and Lucas. They're just absolutely amazing. However, we have to talk Lilith. I mean, we have to.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think I'm going to summarize it as well as you will, but Lilith was there at the garden. Let's just put it that way. And things didn't work out so well with her. How would you describe Lilith to just someone listening who's thinking about buying the book?
Oh, Lilith. Lilith gets a bad rap. And you know what? I have to say, she's one of my favorite characters. I really, really adore her. And I have had people call her some very vicious names because of her naughty behavior. But I think she's also a very powerful female figure. She is, in simplest terms, she's a sex demon. in simplest terms. But there is more to her than that. She is kind of, in her eyes, she is the only female that could ever be a true companion to Lucifer. And that's why, you know, when Maria comes along, who is this weak, frail little girl? That's how Lilith sees her. But there is a beauty in how they are such a yin and yang to each other, because I think it kind of, we always see the person with the devil and the angel on their shoulder, and now you have Lucifer, who has Maria as the angel on his shoulder and Lilith as the devil on his shoulder. So she really has some layers to her.
She definitely does, and you can see that. That's why I actually wound up liking Lilith, because I got her. I got what that was like, because, you know, she was there at the beginning, and, well, she wasn't going to be on anyone's arm. She's no one's arm candy. She's totally in control of herself. But you know what? One thing that you mentioned is she may be the devil on Lucifer's shoulder, and Maria may be the angel. However, Lilith does not mistreat Maria.
No.
That is the most trope thing that you can think of, is that Lilith is going to be wandering around doing everything she can to get Lucifer's eyes off of Maria. You don't go that route. You go a totally different direction, and I think that's what really made the character of Lilith sing, because you made the choice. She's a strong woman. Well, I don't want to say woman, okay, but she's a female. She's a strong, taking crap female. That's what she is.
Well, we can also say what she actually is she's a shapeshifter.
Yeah, and I love that. Oh, my gosh. See, I wasn't even going to say that, because I am not telling anyone how a book ends. I hate it. I don't like spoilers. I don't do spoilers in reviews. I hate it. I would beat people down. Well, okay, maybe I shouldn't say that live on air, but I would be very... Please, let's put it that way. I would be very displeased. But that I thought the beauty of Lilith is that you do, as you said, you have this contrast. However, there are qualities each female, let's put it that way, each female share. Because at the end of the day, Maria, forgive me, I can't help it.
No, it's intentional, it's fine.
Yeah, she told me in the green room, well, that's how it's supposed to be. So if you keep screwing that up, that's okay. But that's just because Kat Damon happens to be incredibly generous and kind. Speaking of which, I do want to touch on the fact that you have, on your official website, you also have a blog where you promote other authors. And
yes,
I cannot thank you enough for that. That is just amazing that you would share kind of your spotlight with other people, and instead of putting it all on yourself, you literally swivel it around to put it on other people. How important is that to you?
Oh, it's extremely important. I had so much support from the writing community. Prior to my original publishing contract, I really did not know people in the writing industry, and I was very much alone in this journey. And then when I signed my contract and went through everything I went through with the press closing, we created such bonds, and I was lucky enough to travel to New Orleans back in May for the RT convention, where I got to meet a lot of these women, these incredible, incredible women face-to-face. And, you know, we really, truly were like a sisterhood, and we truly take joy in other people's successes. It's not, oh, she landed her dream agent. Oh, I can't talk to her anymore. Are you kidding? We're ready to, like, pop the champagne and throw a party. And even if I don't know you, if we've interacted on Twitter and you come to me and you say, I have a cover reveal, would you like to be a part of it? If I have the time, I promise you I will do it.
And that's amazing. And you know what? You've just kind of shattered a myth that I think people just walking into writing and hoping to have it as any sort of a career, you've just shattered the myth that writers are snobbish, isolated, awful human beings who just can't root for someone else. I find that myth to be insulting to all writers and artists everywhere anyhow, but you really embody it on your blog, which is absolutely amazing, by the way. I have seen several books that I'm thinking about picking up thanks to your blog. So I
oh,
know
yay.
Their authors have to thank you for that, because that's just amazing for you to do, and I'm going to thank you on behalf of all of them, because I just think it's an exquisite thing for you to do. But I have to get back to Tammy Darkness, because I cannot laud this book enough, because I'm just overwhelmed at the progression in Lucifer. This is a guy who literally has been around longer than we have. He's seen it all. And you've got this character who's not giving in to him, to a man who's a spoiled, fallen angel, who's a spoiled brat. He's used to getting his own way. But how, you know what, I think a lot of writers, a lot of authors even, might not kill, but they'd possibly maim for the secret of how you make this spoiled brat so relatable, because, you know, he's actually falling for Maria, and Maria's not coming that easily. I also thought it was very interesting how you chose to have him kind of give her this stereotypical, I'm the prince sweeping you away into, you know, luxurious hotels and roses everywhere. And you know what? Maria doesn't need that. She doesn't want it. She appreciates it. But that was a really clever kind of choice on your behalf. Were you consciously trying to break against those stereotypes when you wrote that?
I'm going to backtrack for a minute. Do you mean the part where that she is not the wooing?
He's giving her everything.
He does. He does. I kind of want to date Lucifer. I think he could show me a really good time. But or at least have a drink with him in a bar, because I think that would just be fun. You know what? I kind of liked that this girl grew up with nothing, and I kind of wanted her to see that she could have everything. But even through it all, like you said, it doesn't matter where he's taking her, what he's giving her, or what he's showing her. All she really wants is for him to say three little words to her. And that it's that whole will he, won't he, you know, and he knows it too, because that's also the beauty of Lucifer, is that he can read her mind, and that's a little peek that the reader gets into what Maria is actually thinking. So we can kind of, it's almost like you're getting point of view from two characters at the exact same time.
Right, which is, I found it astounding. I really liked what you did with Maria, in that she's not impressed. She wants him there. She's not interested in all the money. It's surprising. It's nice, but that's not really what she's there for. And he doesn't get that. I really like that, too, that he, even though she's thinking it, even though we're privy to her thoughts, Lucifer doesn't really get the fact that that's not cutting it.
Right.
And
I was just going to say, there's a there's even, I'm not giving anything away, don't worry, but there's even a scene where she's really frustrated with him, and he's frustrated with her because he doesn't understand why she's so frustrated, and it's basically because he's wooing her and everything he can possibly offer her, and she really just wants him to open up and talk to him. And
she
and
wants
that,
to know who he is.
Yeah. Exactly, because he, you know, he's so mysterious, and she's just like, yeah, but tell me about your childhood.
You know? I know, and he's not there. He's like, he's taking breaks. He's going to see Lilith. He's doing this. He's doing that, and he doesn't get that. I thought that was just masterful on your part, because nothing delineates that he's not human in any way, shape, or form than him not understanding what she wants. And by the way, I thought her thought process was really, I mean, it's true to someone, you just really inhabited the character of Maria, because it is like having two perspectives, wonderfully, because she doesn't stop going, okay, who is this guy? Who is he really? And as she tries to kind of figure it out, you can get very subtly suspicion
yeah.
starts to bloom in her, and you know what? He doesn't know how to dispel that either. So the funny thing about that is here you've got Satan, okay? You've got Lucifer, the fallen angel, the guy who's so smooth he can get any woman in bed. And then he confronts Maria, and he's like, what? She was just supposed to fall in bed with me. We were supposed to have a good time. I was supposed to defile her. I was supposed to kind of waver in front of all the other angels and the Almighty. And she's not following the plan. So I think you've really shown that Maria is the exception to the rule of everything he's known before. And you've done it brilliantly. How excited were you? Because I'm just so amazed that you actually wrote the sequel first. How excited were you then to turn to Taming Darkness?
Oh, it was really exciting. And, you know, I wrote Killing Darkness 6 years ago, and that was my baby. And I said, oh, maybe I can, you know, project it forward. But I never considered projecting it back until a year ago. And I really just... It actually happened with a conversation with my friend. We were talking one time because she had read Killing Darkness, and I was asking her, "Oh, which of the characters do you like the best?" And she had said Michael, who's in Taming Darkness, and I went, "Really? Huh?" And she's like, "Well, why? Who did you enjoy writing the most?" And I said, "Lucas Starr," and she said, "Well, you would. You're dark and twisty like that." And I went, no, there's so much more to him. And she kind of was like, yeah, he's the devil. And I went, no. Then I realized people didn't see him the way I saw him, the way I wanted readers to see him. And that's when I started Taming Darkness.
But then to go forward and embody this character so perfectly, it just really kind of whets my appetite for Killing Darkness, because I've seen the projection forward, and you just killed it. I don't know if it was a chapter, a few pages. All I know is I remember every detail of that, and I read it a while back, and I just think, bring it out. I want to see that, because it's going to be told from another character's point of view, which I think is brilliant, because you actually get a totally different view of Lucifer. You're not going to get Maria's view. You're not going to get Lilith's view, but you're going to get a totally different character's view on what he's like and how he's kind of changed since the events that unfolded in the end of Taming Darkness. You're just killing
right.
me Vince here. And that's the other thing. The pacing is beautiful. I mean, you paced it perfectly where I just want to see. I want to keep paging. I mean, I read it in one sitting.
Oh, that's wonderful. People have said that to me, and it just blows my mind.
But, I mean, whenever you wrote it, did it flow quickly for you?
Yes, it was the fastest book I've ever written. And, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, Killing Darkness is a lot longer. This is like my teeny tiny baby book. I mean, so if you're looking for more pages, you're going to get it. Killing Darkness, it's juicy, and it's lots and lots of pages. So you're not going to be able to read it in one sitting.
I need more pages. I mean, I really do, because it's definitely a book you want to sit down, you want to read, and depending on what you're doing that particular day, you're going to get sucked into it just like I was. Speaking of being sucked into things, we're being sucked into break right now. We're going to take a very quick break. I'm sitting here chatting with the fiercely talented author Kat Damon of Taming Darkness fame. We will be right back here on WGGM on Lydia's Literary Lowdown.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and The Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Arvel Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at arvelbird.com and get a hold of all of Arvel's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown, where I am talking with author of Taming Darkness, Kat Damon. During the break, we were talking about a couple of characters that I should have mentioned before now because they made a real impact on me. But then again, Kat made a huge impact on me in portraying Maria as somebody who's strong and doesn't just give in to everything Lucifer decides to lend her. But I want to touch first on Evelyn. I'm not up on demonology, but she seems to be almost a demon prophet. Am I calling that incorrectly?
I call her the Oracle. But, yeah, you could say that she's a prophet. She has visions, and she is actually – some of my characters are real in the sense that they belong to demon and angel lore and mythology, and they are found in the Bible, and there's some that just popped into my head. So Evelyn is one that popped into my head. So her background story is just that when she served in heaven, she was an oracle basically for God, and she could see the future and make sure that things were unfolding and help guide the angels on their path. But when she fell from grace because she followed another angel who decided to fall named Kale, who on Earth they became each other, they call each other mates. They don't say, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend. They just say, she's my mate. And they're together, they're partners. And basically, Kale kind of protects her in a sense because he knows that her visions are misconstrued and she can see things, but Kale doesn't trust them that much, but Lucifer still does. And so he listens to pretty much everything she has to say, and she does have a vision in Taming Darkness.
Yeah, but you know what's amazing about her is that you get this sense of melancholy. You're very talented at showing rather than telling, and sometimes you don't even use words. I swear you don't. It's some sort of odd magic that carried me away, and that is, with Evelyn, there was an almost palpable sense of melancholy with her. She doesn't necessarily like where she's wound up, and while Kale may be, he helps her through it, even he seemed kind of miserable at where he found himself. Is that something you were trying to portray, that melancholy?
Yeah, you know, you said it beautifully, because she really is, there's a sadness to Evelyn. There really truly is a sadness to her, but she loved Kale so much that if it meant falling, she was going to fall and to be with him. But, you know, like I said, her visions are cloudy. And there's actually a mention of the angel who was her best friend in heaven, and that is the Archangel Raphael, who they spoke in riddles together and nobody could even understand them. Archangel Raphael, you're going to meet him in book two.
Which is just amazing. And that brings us to Michael, in my opinion, although I may veer back to Evelyn, because what you did with that character is incredible. You used so little. I mean, Evelyn is not a huge major character in the book, but she is definitely not someone on the side either. And I say that because in just such a few paragraphs, that melancholy and sadness comes off of her. And what I wanted was, she can go so far with this. Kat can do so much with this. Look what she's done with Lucifer and Maria and Lilith. She can go so far with this. So when I heard there was a sequel, I thought, oh, Evelyn. However, if we're talking archangels or angels, period, we have to mention Michael, who we see very briefly in Taming Darkness. And the interesting thing is, he's not a bad guy. He's not, you know, Lucifer wants to think of everything as a war, but
right.
The thing that just totally blew it away for me in a good way is that you get this sense, you don't see a lot of Michael in Taming Darkness, but what you do see, you kind of weave the same magic that you did around Evelyn, and that is you get this sense of strength and power and just a dab of melancholy from Michael towards Lucifer. Every time he talks with him, you get this sense that Michael is not the bad guy here. He doesn't sneer at Lucifer. He doesn't do anything like that. And an even more interesting choice is Lucifer may be a little bit snippy with Michael, but he's not totally disrespectful either. Did you do that on purpose? Because it definitely leaked through to what passes for my brain.
Well, you know, Michael is an extremely important character for me, and he's very well developed in book two. And The way I envisioned him, he was always a soldier. He just is pure soldier, and his job and his military position will always come first. And he sees rules, and he sees right and wrong, but that does not mean that he cannot also see friendship. And I created this little backstory that it's right in the very first few pages of Taming Darkness, but it's from Who's first point of view, of course, so it's a little misconstrued, but of their friendship and how it's kind of sounds silly that, oh, that's my angel BFF, but if you had two angels and they were buddies and pals and they would, you know, hang out together all the time, it would have, in my universe, been Lucifer and Michael. And so when they are together, and then imagine if you had a best friend who betrayed you. There's going to be pain, there's going to be anger, and there's going to be hurt. But when you're together, that melancholiness, like they said, would be present as well, because you would remember the history that you had together.
Well, no. I mean, I think you pull that out of your hat, because I do think there's a magician somewhere in you. Because I think the ordinary reader who is magnificent, by the way, all you readers out there, you. But I, as an ordinary reader, automatically am going to jump to conclusions based on other things I've seen. And I thought, oh, Lord, okay, so whenever they meet again, if they meet again, Michael's going to be, you know, a little bit of a wench, and Lucifer's going to be really snarky. Nothing could have been further from the truth. Because whenever somebody gets to the point, he's smiting you out of heaven, okay? Even though Lucifer would be more than happy to say, hey, I jumped. Nobody pushed me. I jumped. But I would expect that kind of severs the bonds of friendship right there. But you can say all this time that they've had together, there is still a respect there. And, oh, you're just so talented, because one of the tantalizing bits for me is, because there's not huge amounts of animosity there, you manage to tease us with the fact that Michael is going to be a part of the larger story, because the sequel, he's going to be kind of fundamental to that, and you have a book 3 planned as well. So if you have Killing Darkness done, Killing Darkness is done now, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in edits, yeah. So the story's there.
So where are we with this impatient reader? Where are we on book 3?
Okay, with book 3, I'm not revealing my title yet, because I'm going to reveal my title for book 3 when I publish Killing Darkness. There'll be a teaser at the end of Killing Darkness, and that's when you all get to hear the title. So I'm going to hold that as a little secret for now. But where I did years ago was I wrote the final chapter. So I always knew where this series was headed. So even before Taming Darkness existed, I had the ending if I was ever going to move this forward. So I have the final chapter safe and sound tucked away. So that's done. There are a lot of other chunky, meatier chapters done, and I've weaved it together with a loose outline. That's basically where it is right now.
Yeah, but that's amazing. I mean, is it the first chapter that came to you and then you kind of came up with the whole world, or was the last chapter going to be so much fun to write that you just had to get it down right then and there?
Well, you know, I had the idea and I kind of put a few sentences, and then I started writing the first chapter and I stopped myself and I said, no, you have to write the last chapter. And like you said, it was very exciting and fun, and I don't want to say too much.
No, but how often do you go back? Because I don't want to know either. I want to read it. But how often do you go back to that last chapter and just kind of nod and paste a smug smile on your face?
Well, you know what I'm the queen of doing is I'm the queen of foreshadowing, and there's the tiny little details even weaved through Taming Darkness and Killing Darkness that kind of, you know, all unfolds. There's like,
yeah, well, that's where Evelyn... But, and Michael and Kale and even Lilith to an extent, you bring them up, and it's like you're putting a rhesus in front of E.T. for all I'm concerned, because I just want to get that candy. I want to be at that candy. So those hints are absolutely amazing. And can I just say, I think you know how to really dangle, because there are a lot of times someone includes a excerpt from their next book at the end of whatever book I've just read. And there are a lot of times I won't read it because maybe I've not been as impressed with the book I've just read as possible. Yours is, honestly, one of the best teases I've ever come across in a, okay, this is a preview of my next book at the end of a book. It really is one of the best I've seen because, as you said, we move forward. It's a totally different world. We're confronting a different character, and this character is going to see Lucifer in a totally different way. It literally is like being in a time machine. That's what I thought. Oh, my gosh, what? Fast forward? Oh, my Lord, I might. That's pretty much the thought process in as much as I ever think. But here's the other big question I have, and that is, what else are you working on?
Ooh, okay, well, first of all, thank you for all your amazing compliments. What else am I working on? Well, I actually am part of this really cool anthology that's coming out in October, right around Halloween, and it's called The Dark Carnival. And it's a whole bunch of writers on Twitter got together last October. Actually, I think it was August when the idea came together. It was from Pen and Muses, Inc. And basically, we all signed up and took an aspect of what could happen in a carnival, and we made it, we turned it to a horror story. So our work has been combined, and it's going through editing right now, and it should be coming out in around October. And my story, the character that I chose was the Tattooed Lady, and my story is called Permanent Ink.
Ooh, and you know what the first thing is that comes to my mind? It's like if the tattoos come to life. I'm not asking you to tell me anything about the story because I don't want to know anything about the story. But I just wanted to say there is at least one brain cell working in this head, and that's the first thing that comes to mind because I think she'd knock that out of the park. Anything she do, she's going to knock that out of the park. So that gives me a birthday present because my birthday is November the 1st. So
okay.
And, of course, that's part of the Day of the Dead celebration, so I love my birthday. Anyhow. So you're working on the anthology. Is there anything else? I don't need titles. I don't even need what the word count is. But is there anything else that's really got you thinking, okay, I'm going to work on that next? Do you keep, like, a list of ideas by you, or?
I need to be an octopus because I need all, like, 8 hands to type everything I want to type. But basically, I have a finished novel, this unconventional magical realism novel that is subbed out to some really awesome agents right now. And so we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with that. And that's actually the first story that I ever wrote, and I wrote that 7 years ago. And it just took me a long time to just get it right, we'll say, because there's a lot of rewriting. So that's out there. And my new work that I can't wait to dive into, I started and then I said, no, I really got to finish The Darkness Saga, which is what the Taming Darkness books are called. And I kind of peeled back from them, is I'm working on a fairy tale retelling of Snow White, but because I love my villains, it's told from the Evil Queen's point of view, and it's not classic Disney at all. It's actually really medieval, and I'm just loving it. And then the other thing I'm working on that's just my for fun, and I just had to justify her, is I am writing Lilith her own story.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, she needed it. She needed it.
She really does. I think you could do something with Evelyn, too. I want to read everything you put out. So I'm not saying devote any time to that because obviously she's going to become part of Killing Darkness and your final book in the series as well. But I think you do dark really well. And there is one key to doing dark, and that is even if your character is the Evil Queen from Snow White, somehow you're going to make her relatable because in Taming Darkness, Lucifer is not nice. I mean, we have access to his thought processes, and some of the things he does and some of the things he thinks are not nice. They're very dark. They're very dark, and you do dark and gritty really well, but the true talent lies in redeeming these characters in some form or another. Because I wasn't cheering for awful things to happen to Lucifer. I was thinking, okay, well, he's going to learn his lesson, and he deserves it. That's it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I kind of look at a villain and I say, well, what is their motive? And that's where I begin my story. I feel like, you know, I'm not going to just have this creature who's wicked and, you know, born wicked and just, you know, has evil running through their veins. What happened to trigger this part of them that makes them lose their moral compass?
And that's the most fascinating part of all. I mean, because you really, you know, Lucifer is still bad. I mean, he's not good. But reading bad never felt so good. I can say that about Taming Darkness, and that's why you should read it. That said, is that something you're drawn to? I'm not asking for your favorite books. I'm just saying, is there a genre, and is horror one of your favorites? Or do you have other genres that you tend to gravitate towards?
No, you know what? I kind of, my husband will be the first to tell you that I'll read pretty much anything I can get my hands on. You know, like, you'll see me sitting reading an encyclopedia or a young adult book or paranormal or horror. You know, I do like to read a little bit of everything. So it's hard for me to say what specifically, what genres I would fall under. But I have had books that have stuck out in my mind that have made huge impressions on my life. Am I allowed to talk about them? You don't want me to.
Oh, no, it's up to you if you want to.
Okay.
Like Pearl S. Buck, Dune by Frank Herbert. So please do.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, I just like the books that you always go back and you read again. I mean, my all-time favorite book that just touched me in so many ways I picked up when I was 13 years old, and it was Phantom by Susan Kay, and it's the life story of the Phantom of the Opera. And it just, I mean, that is the book that really makes you see a villain and fall in love and root for him. And maybe that's where it just kind of gave me a kickstart in my brain cell. And, you know, of course, Anne Rice, she's just like a little god to me. And my current hero, I have to talk, George R.R. Martin, like Game of Thrones, amazing. So those are really like the things that I drool over. And if I could just do a little crumb of what those people could do, then I'm happy.
I think you've done it, particularly with your very favorite book, which is all about how the Phantom of the Opera kind of, how that progressed, evolved. That's what you do in Taming Darkness with everyone.
Right.
Lilith could be just a cardboard cutout of a really lusty, loose moral woman who just happens to be able to shapeshift. That's what she could turn into. But deep down, and she doesn't show this, she doesn't even say it, but you see it, you infer it. That's what you're really good at. You're good at making the reader infer what's going on. Because Lilith doesn't have to say, well, I feel threatened by Maria, and I'm not really happy with you having to see her. It makes me feel insecure inside. You don't say that. If you did, by the way, that would be a great little comic strip right there, because I can't imagine you actually writing that. Which is a testament to your talent, by the way. But you get the feeling that there is something in her. And I think that's your talent with every character that stereotypically would be bad and you're supposed to root against. The demons all are relatable. There's something about them that you absolutely, you have sympathy for them. Evelyn, I really loved her because you, and I think you should be patting yourself on the back as we speak. I really do. Go ahead and do it. Because
okay.
What you do with so little said, like you are sharp, sharp, sharp. I just get the sense that you are going to take any character and you're going to be able to somehow make me sympathize with them. That is not easy to do. And if that's a major part, as you said, in the book you picked up when you were 13 years old, it was a major influence, and it took a lot more than a brain cell for you to write Taming Darkness, because you have a deftness, a very, and that doesn't pronounce well on radio, I don't think. DEFT, people. DEFT. With your characters and a very light touch in which we can infer a lot about them. Is that a comment you get a lot or no?
I mean, I'm just overwhelmed with your compliments.
Well, yeah, but I told you. See, but here's the fun part. This is the fun part about every interview I do. You were nervous, and I'm like, you can't be nervous, because compared to me, I mean, I'm going to look like an idiot throughout the entire show, which is going to make you look even more intelligent. But it's what you do. At the end of the day, Taming Darkness is just a revelation without inciting biblical revelations. There's a four horsemen because none of those actually feature in Taming Darkness, but it is a revelation because everything you're supposed to be against, every character you're supposed to, you read and think, oh, I'm going to hate her. You do not hate. You just don't. And
right.
I think
actually, you know what's interesting? I got a couple of readers told me they hated Maria. So I thought that was kind of comical. It's like, oh, the little sweet innocent. They loved the dark demons, and they were a little annoyed by her. So that was kind of comical.
Well, it is, because at the, you know what? She has her bitchy moments. I don't know a better way to put it. She has her moments where she's like, yeah, huh, I don't think so. She has her moments. I get what they're saying, but I wonder if they read the book all the way through. And I'm not trying to sling mud at all, but I can see their point of view, but I have to wonder if they read the whole thing, because Maria, you know, every character should have a journey. That's what a book is about. And Lucifer has his journey, but so does Maria. And at the end of the book, we have a very different woman than we do at the beginning of the book. So in a way, you have showed us the progression of two characters that we can root for and sometimes against. To find all of that in between the pages of one book is rather extraordinary, I think. So you better be blushing. That's what I have to say. You better be blushing.
I am blushing a little bit. But you know what I have to say is, and you know, you were saying how do you create a character that's so evolved and, I'm not using the word you used, but developed. And basically, these, especially Lucifer, a.k.a. Lucas Starr, he has three names, and I know it's hard to keep up, but if you read the book, you'll understand the reasoning to my madness. Lucas has been living in my little brain for 6 years. So when you've been living in somebody's head for 6 years, I kind of feel like when I'm writing him, he sits down or he leans over to me, and he slaps me on the arm and says, I would never say that. Erase that. That's not the way I would phrase it. And, you know, with all these characters, you start to know them like you would know your best friend. And so I think if you're a writer, and, you know, I think every writer, you know, can visualize their character. They know what they look like. They know the way they walk. They know the way they brush a hair behind their ear. Everything is so vivid. So hopefully that can get it onto the page.
No, not hopefully. It does. It really does. So you don't have to worry about that. I'll tell you what you have to worry about, getting more work out for me to read right now. Thank you very much. I know it's not possible, but I can say I'm definitely going to be reading all your future work, because it's the sympathy that makes every character take on human-like characteristics that we can relate to, and that's when you really feel for that character. You just happen to excel at that, and that's not a talent every single person has, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, I know you're not going to do what I told you to do in the green room and tell me the whole show sucked and you'll never appear again, but I still have to thank you for being on the show and wait for your response.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I know you want me to say bad things, but I won't. I had the best time. Thank you so much.
One of these days. Thank you so much. Kat Damon, I'm going to be eagerly keeping my beady little eyes on your future work. We'll have to have you on again. You have a great evening.
You too. Take care.
Well, everyone, that was the lovely, and I said it before, I'll say it again, fiercely talented Kat Damon. Check out her website. You can find out all you need to know about her. She's got a great blog, so you can discover new authors. It's katdamon.com, and that's KATDAEMON.com. I'm a big fan of Google, because I find that's how I looked up S.P. McConnell's book, which is not out yet, but I'm going to be haranguing him on Twitter about that. And a quick correction, if you want to follow Terry Wolfe, and you should, she's absolutely marvelous. It's AKA_Terry on Twitter, and Terry is TERRIE. She's fabulous. She's fun to talk to. She kind of puts to rest any sort of agents don't talk to the peons below them. I've not found that to be the case with any literary agent, and I happen to have interviewed my fair share of them. Now, great news. on July the 12th, I'm going to have the lovely Kristen Strassel joining me again. We're going to be talking about her Night Song series, Because the Night, Seasons in the Sun, and Night Moves, which I will post the review for that on my blog on this coming Monday. Everybody, it has been a great show. Lovely to have Kat Damon on. Looking forward to talking to Kristen Strassel on July the 12th. Do not miss it. In the meantime, have a great week, and thank you so much for listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown right here on WGGM.